The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock, and this is Taking Stock live on our YouTube channel. I'm joined by Johnny Boy. All right, Johnny.
Morning. How you doing?
State of the markets this morning. What would you say? In one word?
Yuck.
Clean.
Yuck.
Okay. Yeah, well, the thing is, I don't know what happened there. The market started off earlier, and they started to sort of look a bit okay. They were starting to rally a little bit. You know, there's a bit of green on the screen. But then they've all tumbled a little bit. And it's on this. I think I can see it is the PMI stuff which we're looking at. By all means, do us a favor. If you're listening the first time, hit that subscribe button, like, share. That way more people will find us and more people enjoy it or not enjoy it, whatever. But rise this morning, on the FTSE. It's a big miner there. Athabasca, Anglo-American. So what about the fallers then? Rentokil? Ooh. Diploma, Smith & Nephew, all that stuff. But it's all down, pretty much. Look at the FTSE. Is the worst, actually. Down, 0.41%. AIM All Share, 0.23%. So it's not looking that pleasant. But
yeah. I think a lot of the moves at the moment are being driven by ex-div as well. I couldn't say for sure because I haven't looked at them. Okay. But I know that some big moves last week where companies going ex-dividend.
Yeah, ex-dividend. So I'm always trying to put a positive spin on it because you can't be negative all the time because otherwise you wouldn't get out of bed because there's so much negativity about. So the only thing I can think of is why the market's rolled over a bit is on these purchasing managers in manufacturing numbers came out today for the UK. Now, below 50 is contraction. That means it's slowing, the growth is slowing there. And so it came in at 44.3. It was forecast to get it at 44.2, so just a little beat there. But previously it was 43. It's gone from 43 last month to 44.3. And this is a slowdown still, of course. But in my mind, this is fine. This is what the Bank of England want. They want this. Lack of demand through manufacturing makes a softening in prices, makes inflation doesn't go up. That means they'll stay where they are on interest rates, even lower them. And I also think as well, September, October, not particularly strong months for the markets, but November and December are. Now, if we kept getting these figures that are quite weak going to the end of the year, I think we're on for a good rally because come next year, there's only one way interest rates are going. And so I'm saying it is bearish, and I've been saying for a long time, but I think it's, these are the figures we need to see, contracting, slowing down, and that will stop central banks from raising further. That's what I'm thinking, Johnny. That's my
yes, they won't raise further, but are they likely to fall anytime? Are they likely to cut anytime soon? I think the answer to that is it's probably not for a while. There's a lot of inflationary pressure to wash out the system still. It's...
But I don't think we need to see, as long as we realise the message, the tone coming from the Bank of England is such that they're saying, inflation is coming down. We are, beating the back of it, whatever, cracking the back of it, whatever. I think it will be okay. Let's be honest, FTSE hasn't done too badly, actually. It's international indices. I mean, look at that.
Yeah.
It's not really given away at all.
The FTSE 100 has been propped up with... The energy crisis has obviously been very, very helpful for the likes of BP and Shell, which make up a big chunk of the index. Power producers have done very well, often very large companies. Banks, it's been sort of up and down. Defensives, healthcare has done, continues to do quite well. So, it's characteristics, the ones that it used to be criticised for, being unexciting blue chips, have actually helped it out a great deal over the last couple of years.
This is the FTSE 250. That's down by 25% since the high. And that's 763 days ago. Now, the real car crash, of course, is the AIM All Share. Look at that. It's literally down. What has it been down? We're now down 40-odd percent. 44% from the high 756 days ago. So this is why I'm quite... But I mean, if you look at the steepness of that chart, it's levelled off. Let's look at some comments. First and foremost, someone said, we look at XP, one of the biggest fallers today, and Horizonte Minerals. So they're in the doghouse, those two. I'm looking for a nice phrase, rather than rises or fallers. What can we have in the doghouse, best of class today? Something like that. But they are in the doghouse, Horizonte and XP. In fact, look at that. But some of my comments, Simon said, market timing, caution still needed in my view. The yield curve inversion is now 15 months and still 0.5% or minus 0.5% inverted. The average time for interest rates to fall after a pause is around about 8 months. Yeah, but the market knows that, though. The market's, like I said, if you look at just the example of the AIM-ALT share, it's dropped off for 2 years, and we haven't had an official announcement of a recession. So it's pricing that in.
I think we give the market a bit too much credit for what it apparently knows.
Oh, yeah. But it can't. It'll try and price in. It'll try and price in what it can. Can't you know? If you're driving on the road there and you can't see a crash happening up ahead because it's a bit foggy and misty, you're likely to crash. But if the fog and mist lifts a bit, you can sort of see what's going on. You just slow it down a bit.
Yeah. So I tend to agree with Simon here. This is. We're in a sticky spot economically, and yes, you know, ultimately this you know, bad economic news suggests that the medicine is working and that there will be a shift in policy at some point down the road. But you know, we've still got, you know, some tremendously awful economic news coming out, and I think XP Factory is an example of
XP Factory. XP,
you know, how much that economic news has not been priced in.
I know there's lots of complexities, but Simon says we are therefore run about 12 months from the bottom, in my view. What? Simon, look at history. We've never had a bear market as long as that, ever.
He is looking at history. It doesn't matter, but the past can guide what we think, but it isn't a definitive roadmap to where we may be going. And things, you know, are slightly different this time. There is so much debt washing around the system.
Yeah, there is.
There before, and so few levers that policymakers have to pull.
Yeah, but that'll be cured by reducing of interest rates. He says, and it's obviously the UK markets will bottom and not bottom until the US has, and that hasn't even got a bear market yet. Yes, they were in a bear market, but they've rallied out of that.
Yeah, they've bounced back out. But, their bounce was, again, this was driven.
Yeah.
I mean, this to me is just, this is people hunting those quick gains. And, you know, we know what drove that. It was people getting very excited about AI. And yes, Nvidia is the big driver of a lot of the US market throughout this period. And its shares quadrupled. There's a lot of AI infrastructure to be built out. But, you know, we're not really seeing, you know, the true benefits of AI revenues coming through. I think the market has got ahead of itself again, and it's sort of retreated from peaking.
Well, the AIM-ALT share hasn't. I mean, the S&P has.
So you've got some strange dynamics at work here. People, you know, I think are desperate to find those positive returns, but the reality is things are very, very tough out there. And, you know, AI is a game changer, and it will change the entire nature of the world, and it will underpin long-term equity returns as companies used it to increase productivity in the years ahead. But right now we've got you know, to work out how to use it. We've got a few years of working out how to restore some stability to the financial system, and we're not there. And you know, Simon refers to a book, The End of Everything Bubble, and you know, that's exactly what we've had: cheap money driving the price of everything up, and it's got to deflate, and it could deflate more slowly than history would suggest.
So this is the S&P, right? And this is where it came down to. It did go 27% down between, you know, from January 22 to October 22. But look at these levels I put here, going back since 1929, okay? These are the averages. This is average bear market without recession. That's for 12 months. And it should have come down to this level. It hasn't, okay?
But there's still every possibility that the US could slip into recession, you know?
Yeah, I think they will. These, you know, constrictions central banks are putting on the economies take a while to kick in, a long time to kick in. You know, like I said, you go back 18 months, only just started hiking interest rates. Mm. So the full effect of these interest rates. But when they see, because we're already seeing negative figures coming out, you know, contraction like in the PMIs. When they see the actual massive effect is happening, they'll ease up. They'll have to, because they're going to create every single economy otherwise. And that's what they have to do. So you're
unfortunately, I think, you know, no amount of easing up or anything else will fix what's going on in China.
No. Well, that's a car crash.
It's a car crash, in the second biggest economy in the world, and one which will send, you know, I would say more than ripples around the world. And, you know, XP Power today.
Yeah.
Well, is a fine example of, look at that, of the dangers lurking there.
It's the most followed company on Vox. It's also the biggest loser. They are the two biggest losers, right, are the most followed. This suggests to me people are jumping in for a catch and falling knife trade. Be careful when you do that. it doesn't play out very often, very well, you know? Mm. And so be careful. So Brett XP, what's happened? Let's have a look at the news then, John. And
they, oh, start it's story. Awful.
I mean, what do they do, XP? Sort of, what do they do? Provide sort of manufacture power controllers. There we are.
Power controllers,
essential
yeah.
hardware. Yeah. Every piece of electronic equipment. But this is where they start off. So they got a big exposure to China. And as we know, we were talking about this actually this morning. I was saying, China now have enough empty apartments to rehouse the entire population of China and have some left over. So if you moved everyone out of their China, out of their apartments, put them in the new apartments, there'd still be plenty of room. So they've overbuilt and they're building airports, I said, that no one ever needs. It's bigger than Heathrow Airport. So I don't see how they unwind from this. The debt problem there is huge. And how do they unwind from this? It's not going to take a couple of months. It'll take a while. So it's a little bit worrying, China. Mm. But they do say here, trading over the third quarter resulted in uncertainty. The economic uncertainty in China has also led to a reduction in demand, the market. And then they talk about having net debt of 163 million net debt. That means basically, you know, if you added all the cash up and the liabilities and all that, and then they'd have minus 163 million. That's how much they have. And yet they're 258 market cap. So that's a little bit worrying. And they talk about banking covenants, and they've spoken to their lenders to say if they're going to breach those covenants or not. So not only is it going to be weaker growth here, but their debt, you know, is going to be hard to service. And they're asking for a bit of liquidity, a bit of maneuverability. And yet people are jumping in here.
Well, I don't think they're jumping in buy it. I mean, jumping in and watch
are.
It.
They are. Yeah, they are.
I mean, the sort of share price would suggest that most people are selling. It's down 44% today.
Yeah, but most people are selling, yes. But market makers are market down. But I mean, if you look at the volume pretty much, you can guarantee there'll be buys and selling going on. Because it is always
the market.
I would just wait for the bounce here. I mean, you see, it's not off its low. It did go down to the low of 1260, it's now at 1340. So there's been a bit of buying in there. But so often is the case, you know, sometimes even if you leave it 3 days, which is the magic number, leave it three trading days and then have a look. Mm. But even that, I think it could prove trickier because you've got problems with trading and their debt. So to me, it's not an easy quick trade. Sometimes when you see companies with no debt and they're a temporary blip maybe, but doesn't that very often, you normally get these bad news comes in threes, doesn't it? You have to wait until like the next trading update or the final results and the trading up after that is still not going to recover that quickly. Yeah. So be careful about these falling knife trades. They're not good. They're dangerous. They're risky, very risky.
I'd be very, very careful with this one. You know, the kind of applications it sells power into, you know, the sort of higher end manufacturing, and you know, if the UK's manufacturing figures are anything to go by, and you know they're reflected around the world, then that sort of manufacturing is really, really struggling.
Yeah, oh, so, Germany, by the way, let's get this up. It's fun, the right thing, but Germany. I can't find it, but anyway, but Germany. We are at 44, you know, where's our thing? So we are at 44.3, below 50 is Germany at like 38. Mm. 38 Germany at. So you can see, and so they got a little bit more exposure to China because they are more of a manufacturing base there, aren't they, in Germany? We're more of a service economy. But 38, that is worrying. And so you know, that is really contracting. So, and that's the biggest economy in Europe. So, yeah. It's not good.
All very nasty.
Eight horizontal minerals. Back in the day, I used to own a few of these because I did like where it was going in nickel. Nickel is needed for more EVs and all that stuff. But I don't know what's going on here. So if you go back to like construction update, right? Back here, they said that 329 million has been spent on Araguaia construction out of the budgeted capital requirement of 537, right? They were online to produce Q1. They're going to produce in. And now today, they're saying they need 35% more, are required at least 35%, and a delay to Q3 2024. They are in the doghouse. That is bad news, isn't it?
It's bad news. But again, you know, what we've learned this year is that building a mine has become a lot more expensive. Operating a mine has become a lot more expensive. You know, they demand huge amounts of power, huge amounts of labour.
That chart.
You know, huge amounts of capital equipment. And so, it's become very, very expensive. We've seen this across the industry.
Yeah, you've got a question, though. They were going to be in production in Q1. How is it so late in the day before they realize, oh, hang on, we're going to need an extra 200 million?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is
that, and now we're gonna, and then Brexit is going to be the back end of next year. How we're only like, we're literally 3 months away from Christmas, less than that. You know, this time in 3 months, it'll all be over Christmas.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
That, I mean, that, and that, you know, that's probably why, you know, the reaction has been so extreme. My shares down, you know, nearly 60%, because that's a big surprise to spring on the market.
It's not a nice surprise, is it?
Really? No, it's not. Like, and as you say, it's one that perhaps they should have been cognizant before, and certainly, you know, fed the market with some sort of regular update on this, so that, you know, it didn't really catch everyone by such a surprise.
Yeah, so that's the 2nd of October. They didn't, you know, they didn't say anything passing the formal, but they didn't say, you know, anything until, well, August was the last sort of update, I think, but they probably mentioned it in the thing. There was nothing wrong there in the interims, which was like, you know, in August. And then all of a sudden they came up with this, with 3 months to go until they start constructing it or whatever. And they say, oh, by the way, we're going to need 200 million more, probably. And it's going to take a lot of time. That is a slap in the face, that.
You know, it is a fair old project. I mean, this is going to generate 250 million top line in 2025, according to forecasts. Although they will have somewhat changed now. But the other thing to note about mining is, you know, there hasn't been a lot of mining capacity coming online, and there are going to be a lot of metals required for the energy transition. Yeah. This is very, very nasty news. But you know, what it's doing is something that not even a lot of the majors are trying to do, which is build new mines. So, you know, you've got to give it credit for that.
I don't know what, you know, I find that really poor. I mean, you know, on just that late in the day, so they need that much more extra cash.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, and yet, of course, because the share price has dropped now, and what is it? It's a 141 million market cap. They need more than that.
Yeah, so they're going to have to dilute them to raise that money. It's going to be a very hugely dilutive placing. God, you know, with who, I don't know.
Well, debt funding, probably, hopefully. Debt that's funding. Mind. But that's a worry.
Yeah, not nice.
No, so that's, and people are jumping in on that. Gulf Keystone Petroleum are rising today because they do operate in a sort of quite risky jurisdiction. They do say here that suspension of Kurdistan crude exports from the closure of Iraq-Turkey pipeline in March continued to delay. But apparently, I did see somewhere that this is maybe opening back up. So that's why it's rising. So that pipeline, is, you know, the oil pipeline they got there, BKP, senior. Nevertheless, longer term, it's not been a good story here. You know, we're down from like 280 to a quid, but it has a nice rally today. But one rally, a trend does not make, as they say.
No.
Nowhere. Anything caught your eye, John? News? Well, but someone said Beeks Financial. I'm not. They were followed today for some reason. They're going to put a news out. 60
really?
Million market cap, final results.
Nice numbers. Nice numbers.
Set me up, yeah.
But it's basically sort of cloud-based data management for big financial services companies. I want to go away and spend a bit more time looking at it because this is sort of complicated stuff, but the numbers are really nice. So I'm going to go away and I'll come back on this one tomorrow.
So 60 million mark, this is final result. So three times sales, pretty much. What's the profit there? Operating loss. Okay, so making operating loss. Last year they made a bit of a profit. They don't know what's going on there. Let's have a quick look at their cash. Cash, they got 7.8. That's fine, isn't it? It's gone down from
decent amount of cash. I think they've got a few borrowings as well. So the net cash position is actually a little bit lower.
Yeah,
and it's around.
Yeah.
I think it's around 4 million or so. It's forecast to make profit, pre-tax profit this year, 2023. You know, cash is not a worry. Top line's growing nicely. The shares aren't exactly cheap as chips, but they're not expensive for a growth stock. I just need to get my head around what it does a bit more, because as I say, this something is somewhat complicated.
Again, that's in a downtrend, and if trend is your friend, you know. If you like it, put an alert on it, wait until it starts to get above that 50-day at least. That's Beeks. What else is followed here? Anything? So what's on the other? You've done a bit on Equip. Mention, what are they doing?
Equip, mate. Yeah, I mean, I've spoken about these before. I like this company. Up the road from me on the Norfolk border. They're an electrification specialist for all sorts of electric vehicles, from buses to to sort of light vehicles. They've got a JV, well, a partner out in India that's helping them tap into that market. But the main business is basically turning old buses into electric buses.
Oh, okay.
It's really a commercial inflection point story. They've gone from, you know, being very sort of laboratory, research and development based, you know, fair amount of grant funding in the business, which is still coming in, but the bulk of revenues are now commercial.
Yeah.
And it's basically turning fire, you know, let's say buses, fire engines, those sort of big vehicles that are expensive to scrap or replace. So this is a more cost effective way for fleet owners to do that.
Someone did say it, actually, because we got a bit of stories on Futura Medical, and of course.
It's a very, very, very short patent story, but it's really, you know, underpins their ability to market their treatments in Europe. So that's good news for them.
And it was a comment on these on Friday, actually. Gregory said Futura Medical share price has been drooping, but standing up now.
Yeah, I think that's,
and of course they do gel for erectile dysfunction. So that's Gregory's gag there.
Hey, you can't speak about that company.
We've got thoughts on Dexter says, any thoughts on Gym Group?
I don't really like it.
Why's that?
Well, I mean, I just think
I don't like the gym.
I don't like the gym. I think you know the principle, the concept is not a poor one, you know, low cost, you know, affordable gym memberships. I just think you've got some, you know, it's not uncompetitive. You know, we know that people are sort of worrying about subscriptions and the gym subscription is one of those. And, you know, I think if you're rolling out gyms, it's a big old CapEx story. There's a lot of money that has to be spent on expansion. You know, this isn't a sort of build once, sell many type model. You've got to build a new gym, basically.
Yeah.
I don't fancy it.
They're at 202 million market cap. They had their interim results out for the 6 months to end of 30th. The top line was up, of course, but the loss has gone up as well quite a bit.
Yeah.
On these 74%. So with these, always with gyms, when you open up these things, there's always lease liabilities, or, of course, or maybe just debt you have to take on.
But that's, it has to be lease liabilities because you know, they're leasing property. That's why I say that I think, you know, that they are CapEx intensive companies. And, you know, where a lot of money has to be spent, it's got to come from somewhere. You know, and if it's not sort of self-generated expansion story, which this doesn't seem to be at the moment. It's not a market I like. I think back to the 90s, the late 90s, early 2000s, when you had a similar explosion in gyms and it didn't end well.
Yeah, I mean, look at that there. The borrowings of 63 million non-current there. This is less, you know, not within the next 12 months, but nevertheless, that's lease liabilities of 320 million. So in this worry, I mean, the charts are looking too bad. It's taking a bit of a hammering. And it's come down from a long. But if you see it here, even if you look at the 200-day moving average, it's not passed of that for a long time. Now it's starting to flirt with it. So, you know, it may have ended. The downtrend may have ended. But, you know, how big is the upside with that kind of the weight of an anchor of debt and lease liabilities are on your neck?
I'm looking at the share pad figures here for net borrowing. And at the end of 22, their net borrowing figure is 415 million. And a lot of that is lease based, but leases are part of the balance sheet these days. They are liabilities,
and so
they can't be ignored. And that was a big and important accounting change. It affected retailers, and in particular, but you know, this is in essence somebody, you know, this using property to supply a product, that sort of level of liability would worry me a great deal.
Yeah.
Not one for me. And not just because
my thought on debt is for bigger companies, a lot of bigger companies will have debt, you know. But my thought on this is you don't. There's plenty of companies out there without debt, you know, and they're good businesses. So why would you pick a company with lots of debt? And it's just an extra risk, you know.
I don't mind debt.
It's fine, you know. But
I don't mind debt at all. You know, and many sort of particularly larger companies use it very efficiently. But you have to have something that is reliable, can reliably deliver cash flows to make sure that debt is supportable.
Yeah.
And, you know, just going back here to Gym Group, I mean, I'm looking at the end of last year, you know, there was a cash outflow from the business. So, you know, it's it's got a lot of debt for its ability, vis-a-vis its ability to generate cash. That's my great concern about not just Jimbo, but any company that has a rollout like this.
Now, Proteom Services, they're up 11% a day. How do you say it?
Proteom Sciences.
Sciences. Launch of single cell proteomics. What the heck? I'll scroll down here. Let me just say one thing. Companies, please put a description always below the RNS of what your company does. Because sometimes I see companies not doing that in an quite complex area of business. I think, I want to know what you do. So, but they are a special provider of contract. I don't even know how to say that word, to enable drug discovery, development, and biomarker identification, and employs proprietary workflows for the optimum analysis of tissue cells, body. Okay, so,
Don't ask me how the science works. You know, this is, I haven't even got a biology GCSE. So, you know, this is the science bit of it is not where I'm positioned to comment, but I look at this company, I think, you know, this is, you know, drug discovery, anything that can accelerate and improve the drug discovery process is going to find itself in demand. And, you know, and this is, and I think across to a company called Bioventix, which you may know. Mm-hmm. And Bioventix has essentially made its, you know, a very, very good living out of supplying, what Bioventix does is antibodies, which are used in life sciences, in sort of drug discovery and other applications like that. So this is it's that picks and shovel type idea. But when it comes to life sciences, don't bet on the punt that, you know, you've got a 50-50 outcome of getting something through a clinical trial, although that is improving thanks to innovations like this.
And
other companies and AI, exactly. Mm-hmm. But if you're going for the picks and shovels, then, you know, that's where I think the risk-reward play is in this sector.
Yeah, so they say where the traditional approaches can measure a few tens of proteins on each cell using antibody labelling, their version, which is SysQuant, says it can identify more than 1,000 proteins in each study of 576 cells. Oh, there we are. So where are they in their life? Are they making money then, or they make the revenue very little, I suppose? Is it,
I mean, it's a fairly early on in the process. No, I mean, turnover 7.8 million. It's not a small company.
Really?
Yeah, turnover, pre-tax profit, 1.3 million. They're selling this stuff.
So 3.2, 3.2. Okay, cost of sales is down a little bit, making a bit of a loss. But how much cash they got? They got cash of 3.7. That's fine.
Plenty of cash.
They got current borrowings of 10.8 million.
But they've got cash in the bank to actually, you know, to keep things ticking over. I kind of like this. I think it's in the area of the market that I like, and the numbers seem to be moving in the right direction.
Some chat here. Should I clear out all my blockchain investments to make space for AI? Yeah.
No.
What you want to go for is blockchain AI. That's what you want to go for. No. Blockchain, I mean, I think it's a valuable technology, but how it's going to be commercialized. AI, we can see how that's going to be commercialized. And I think, you know, there are lots of companies doing it and accelerating very quickly. And it's the real deal.
I was doing a fair amount of reading about AI over the weekend.
Yeah,
because that's what I like to do at the weekend. I think it's fascinating. But as I said, I think, you know, you've had that initial splurge of excitement.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, things will always moderate. You know, there is always a sort of settling period. The big guys, you know, Microsofts and Amazons are you know, doing some amazing things. You know, developing sort of cloud based AI tools, and you know, it would never harm you to hold shares in those sort of companies.
No.
And they are the picks and shovels of AI, basically.
Yeah. But I mean, look at it specifically. There are companies been working in this area for a long time. I mean, you know, like I said, Intelligent Ultrasound have been using AI now. You know, they've built up 37 million images, and they use that to their advantage. So they've been using AI for like 6 years now. And in fact, we talked about Silver Bullet recently. They've been doing it for over 6-7 years now. And they just so it's not like they've just come up with it. You see certain companies having AI strategies. But there are certain companies been doing it and using it for a long time.
It is a slightly different type of AI. You know, the generative AI is what we've seen this year with ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's a different
AI. And it's sort of, it's learning ability and language ability sort of, you know, sets it apart from what we've had before. And it sort of changes many industries, particularly those that are, you know, knowledge-based or, you know, process-based. And so, you know, there are going to be huge, huge productivity gains from AI across a multitude of industries. I think healthcare is the one that interests me.
Yeah. And there's lots of areas, right? Anything that creates lots of data that can be used, you know, in that way. I mean, it can, you know, transform. This is a nice one. You're going to have to change your name. Anyway.
Because you can't pronounce it.
Yeah. He says, I bought a little Spirax Sarco this morning. Is it horribly off topic to mention a quality stock? Yeah. Go on then, mention one.
Spirax is a great company.
So what do they do? Spirax.
They're pumps. Pumps. Industrial liquid management. Pumps. Basically. This is an amazing company. UK
600. They're a FTSE 100. They're a big company. FTSE 100. So what's the SPX? Let me ask you, Rissoff, what kind of return... do you have any return in mind? What you're hoping to achieve in this company? That's, of course, big rally 2021 came off.
Well, that was the dash for quality. Yeah. So you know that we lots of really very 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 good quality companies, and I'm talking things like Gaines Workshop and Spirax Sarco, Diploma, who we were talking about the other day. You know, saw these tremendous rallies because one, you know, they're leaders in their field, their expertise in what they do is really second to none globally. Secondly, you know, there was a massive re-rating because, you know, you had this wall of money, it needed to go somewhere, and people wanted to go into the highest quality stocks they could find. And so those two factors are what we saw here. The trouble
is, it's gone from like £5 back in when it listed, I assume 1985, and it did hit. What's that? Is that 160 or no 14 quid? Is it £9? I mean, 94 quid. £94 right now.
I mean, the problem was everything got, you know, bid up to, you know, ridiculous valuations, and I will use the word ridiculous. So when we had this inflationary crisis, you know, and obviously the effects on the future value of money and you know, that had a more profound effect on highly rated companies. So they've come off.
Yeah.
They're still not cheap, but they are one of the best, you know, type of, at what they do. There are a few companies better. I'd still be very wary on valuation grounds. But you know, there's no doubt that Spirax and the others that I've mentioned are brilliant companies.
Yeah, it may have to go sideways for a while. It's retesting that almost previous low back in the year in 2022 was 90 quid odd. I'd say that's a nice break if I have a quid would be nice, but it seems like it's a bit of softening here. So
I think it might just bounce around for a bit. But you know, I don't know what's the dividend like. I haven't looked at it, but it's no point. No harm holding it. It's an absolute cracker of a company, but it might not generate the returns that you'd hope for a little while.
No, we are. Any other news out? Have you covered anything else out today? Protium, anything else, Johnny Boy?
No.
AI investors said, have we covered any of these companies? KGH, RFX, DRV, PHSC, BLIN, I think they've done. BCAP, RNO, Renault. We've done it, Renault. Yeah.
Renault we did.
Chris also says, thank you as always. Good to have you both making sense of the chaos. I think we're making more chaotic, didn't we? thoughts on CAN, that's K-A-N, medical cannabis, looks good news, RNS, especially on debt, genuinely, I'm not over the cannabis sector, I don't understand it, I think there's lots of players in it, there's lots of regulatory hurdles there, and I just think it's an extra thing to try and learn about, because I don't know if anyone's making any headway, are they? There's a lot of competition in that space.
I did have a quick peek, I saw that comment, I thought I'd have a quick look. I think they are making a bit of progress.
Cannabis is KNB though, isn't it? It's not KNB.
Oh no, hang on. So, yeah, you're right.
Do you mean cannabis? I mean, we've seen literally, who was the one recently went out? MGC, MGX Pharma or MG Pharma?
MGC Pharma, yeah.
They're looking delisting. I think, I'm not over it. I'm not an expert in this field. I see there's a lot of competition in there, and I also see regulatory pressures and hurdles there. So that's why I'm not hanging around in this area, because you can have seemingly a company coming up with good operational updates, and all of a sudden the game may change due to regulatory announcements.
So. I can't see anything listed as CAN, K-A-N. I assume we're talking about Canabo. I think it is making a bit of progress, and you know, for sure this stuff is being prescribed. It's a slightly strange process. A friend of mine has been prescribed this for quite severe nerve damage, stroke, arthritis. The prescribing process is a little odd, to say the least. So you know, there is further to go in terms of the integration of treatments like this into the UK healthcare market, into the NHS. It's really helps, you know, this is all about pain management, chronic pain management. And, you know, my friend says it's basically reset. This treatment has reset his relationship with pain, which is good. Feels much better as a result of it. And I think it sounds, reading what Canabo are up to, they are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, some people pay for a relationship. Some people pay good money for a relationship with pain, don't they?
Well, you still have to pay for it.
In a deviant kind of way.
Anyway, so I think, you know, it's developing a digital GP service. It's developing, you know, its own products and delivery systems, which is important. So yeah, I think yes, it's been a hot market, but one perhaps worth revisiting here. I think it looks half decent.
Rob says the IFRS 16, this is what leases are called, and leases have really changed balance sheets like Jim Group, also affect the civil engineers. Also worth looking at the balance sheet changes for these types of regulation in portfolio. Yeah, but just going back to cannabis, my thought is this, right? If you can deal with the government to get some kind of regulations through, don't bother, especially this government. It's like they don't even know where they're building HS2. From like Birmingham to Manchester yet. They won't make a decision on that. And then you've got Rishi Sunak on the weekend saying that, are you going to do a tax break? The best tax break we can give to people is to bring down inflation. That is not a tax break, okay? That is not tax. And in fact, you're not doing anything for inflation. All you're doing is that you're talking about it, because the Bank of England, who are independent of you, they're ratcheting up costs. So I think that's the most disingenuous answer I've ever heard from a politician. You know, this is the best thing we can do for inflation. What are you doing for inflation, Rishi? What are you doing? What is he actually doing for inflation? I don't think he's doing anything. And then he says, that's a tax break.
I mean, you've imposed the highest tax burden on the UK in sort of living memory. And that's disinflationary.
Exactly, that's what he's doing, I suppose. He should say that. That's what he should say. We're trying to kill people. We're trying to really strangle people's spending power. That's what we're trying to do. And that's my contribution to it all.
I think it was very disingenuous. I watched the interview. I almost spat my tea over there.
They've obviously thought that's a good answer. Because they don't have an answer. They've obviously thought that's a good answer. The best we can do for taxpayers is bring down inflation. That is not a good answer. It's completely avoiding the answer, and it's actually misleading.
I mean, to be fair, you know, they've obviously got lots of advisors who are helping them with their messaging. Well, no, I think that, you know, they're trying to sell a sow's ear to the electorate as a pig's silk purse. But there's not a lot of good news for them. There's not a lot of wiggle room. Like I say, they can't cut taxes. They can't do anything substantial, really, except, you know, the smallest crumbs of handouts, I despair. Well, apparently the Conservative Party conference is a bit of a ghost town, so I think that might suggest the writing on the wall is who picked that?
Apparently they're in Manchester at like a former railway place, and they can't even answer the question of whether they're going to go ahead. Why did they actually pick that town? All they're going to get is questions on HS2, or that city. Someone said the good news on TAP. I have read TAP previously. I've forgotten what it's all about, though. TAP's coming. A regulatory crypto app bridging the gap between traditional finance and blockchain technology. I know that. Is there need to do that, though? Why do we need it? We've got digital money now, haven't we?
I mean,
I don't see any cash these days.
It is something different.
It may be bad. I understand I'm in a negative mood now because of Rishi Sunak. But his partnership with a US-based digital infrastructure platform Hash will enable 45 million active cryptocurrency users in the US to access TAP solutions. That's a bit overblown, that. 5 million people can access that.
I would be more worried about regulation in this sector than any other. Than say medical cannabis, for example. You know, we saw, I think was it last week, week before, you know, there was certain banks stopping crypto transactions.
They got some revenue though, you know.
Yeah.
Some of these companies don't have any revenue in this, so, you know.
Yeah. I would worry about regulation in this space.
They got an app, they got 12 new cryptocurrencies listed on the platform. I did see the take up. In fact, this is what I remember before. Their registered users, if the figures can be believed, of course, looking very good, looking very strong. I mean, registered users up 30% since listing to 144,000. That's quite a lot on an app, like, you know, based on Aqua stock. That's quite decent, it seems. I don't know what the loss making, like, full year revenue 2.5. That's decent, I think, actually, for, you know, but it's a hard
area. I'm not saying there isn't some sort of, you know, genuine applications behind crypto and blockchain. It's just that I think there's a lot of risk in this sector. And I say my main risk is one of policy, one of regulation.
Yeah. The idea of blockchain, you know, and it's decent technology, but I just think at the moment, because if you took Bitcoin, for example, right? First of all, it was like a store of value, you know? But then it dropped like 72%. It's quite volatile.
That wasn't a store of value.
Yeah, and then there's a payment, a currency, but you can't really, because it's so volatile. And who is using it to pay for anything? So I don't know, what is it now? It's just a vehicle for trading, is it? To be honest, it's a trading vehicle. That's what it is. To make a bit of cash in there or lose a bit of cash. That's what it is. It's got good liquidity, but that's what it is. Anything else, John? Anything else we're talking about? Oh, we missed some chat there. I don't know. I'm a bit sceptical on crypto. Not blockchain, but crypto. I think a lot of it's been, you know, created from spammers, people who just want to fleece you, essentially. Okay.
No, I haven't seen much else. I know it's Vizarian on that list. Don't know what shares. Oh, shares down again. Actually, it's not on the website just yet, but I've just spoken to the management of Direct Plus.
Oh, okay.
Which is a graphene company that really has taken that amazing technology out of the lab and is making huge commercial strides. So, yeah, that'll be up on the site later today. So worth looking out for that.
Gregory says inflation is a kind of tax. They can print and dilute what you have. Yes, but
you can't.
I'm saying when you
raise tax, we pay money to the government. That money is then invested in public services and infrastructure.
Yeah,
that is certainly not the case with inflation.
No, and they didn't.
Like a tax, yeah. But it's just not a tax.
When they actually started on the, you know, the program of QE, quantitative easing, they were suggesting there may be some inflationary, you know, side effects. That's what they said, maybe. So they weren't quite sure of that. So anyway, maybe US large cap applied materials. So something else that's nice there. Result of giving Maddox too some advice on the chat there. But I think, you know, I not just going for AI completely, just have an investment in AI for the sake of it. But I think you need to look at companies that have, you know, decent applications that are using AI and they've been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
Not just trying to get AI exposure for the sake of it. It's like
anything, isn't it? I would suggest being more mindful of companies that don't adopt AI that might find themselves disrupted.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yes. Just quick finish off on the old business stories. House prices fall. In fact, they didn't fall in August at all. They just stayed where they are, but they're down below. They're saying, same figures there. After a while, bad news doesn't have the same impact. And that's why markets tend to rally, after a while, because you get the initial bad news coming out as expected, and then it's not as bad as expected. Then all of a sudden, it gets a bit better. And the markets are rally before that. This is annoying. Water firms want bill rises to cut leaks and spills. So they want to raise I would say, first of all, okay, cut all dividends. And then if that isn't enough money, then you can raise your prices. But first of all, cut your dividends. So if you can't afford to do that without rinsing, you know, users of it, then you shouldn't be paying dividends. That's the whole point, you know?
Well, we talked about Severn Trent last week, which is raising a billion to... to plug its leaks. I don't know what its forecast dividend is this year. Let's have a look. Forecast dividend is, its forecast dividend is going to be up. So interestingly, raising money and giving it back at the same time.
Guys, aren't they? I know. They've got one job to do. One job, serve us clean water and keep our bills low. Just be efficient. As I know, we're just going to pay dividend payers and carry on that way. And then we'll charge more people. And that money will probably go in dividends as well. So the more money we can get, the better for shareholders. There we are.
Large companies, managerialism, all gone wrong.
Marvellous stuff. Any other things that caught your mind, John?
So, no, not tonight.
Oh, by the way, I'm hopefully as well interviewing James, CEO of Truefin, this afternoon. And so hopefully that's going to go ahead. It's supposed to be this morning, but it will not. They had their final results, interim results out last week. And I think some people missed this, but their revenue, I'm looking at their revenue for H1, right, is 8.5 million. It's a loss making, but they've got plenty of cash. And it's expected to go up to 27.6 million for the full year. That's an increase. It's doubling from H1 to H2, basically from 8.5 to 19 million in the second half. This is worth watching, honestly, because they are plugged into Lloyds and all that stuff. But it's decent. It's quite several inflection points. PlayStack, the more games have been released this year, and the adoption of Satago, the invoice lending by Lloyds, has been rolled out to their client book. And Lloyds, of course, is huge. So and Sage use it as well. And a challenger bank has just come on. On to sign up to it as well. So I think it's a tech company worth looking at. Cool. Thanks very much, everyone. Please like, subscribe, share if you could. And we'll speak tomorrow. Cheers, Johnny.
See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.